fabulous start.
Okay, I apologize because, oh, now it's gone and disappeared on me. Shoot. I meant to print my reading, which is a quote from David White, or a poem from David White, and I didn't, so now I have to read it to you. Okay, great. It's called Sometimes. Sometimes, if you move carefully through the forest, breathing like the ones in the old stories, who could cross a shimmering bed of leaves without a sound, you come to a place whose only task is to trouble you with tiny but frightening requests, conceived out of nowhere but in this place, beginning to lead everywhere. Requests to stop what you are doing right now and to stop what you are becoming while you do it. Questions that can make us or unmake a life. Questions that have patiently waited for you. Questions that have no right to go away. Thank you so much for having me today. As I was introduced, my name is Susanna Rempel, and I'm the former executive director of New City. And we were an organization that worked to engage faith communities like yourselves in the work of ending the cycle of homelessness for families and individuals. So I'm here to speak a little bit about that experience and also my new experience of motherhood. And I just want to acknowledge, not knowing your own stories, that if for any reason any of this is triggering for you, I don't know, you know, how that could be as a new mom. I'm very much in my new momness, and I don't know other stories around motherhood or not motherhood or parenthood or whatever. So I just want to acknowledge that. So I'm going to speak today about the six practices that were mentioned earlier, and I'll go through each, share a little bit of definition of what they are, and then also speak about how it relates to my motherhood, but also how it related to the families and the individuals that we worked with at New City. And what you can potentially, I'll have some reflections for you all to think about that you can take away with you into the week. So working at the New City, I lived, worked, and breathed the six practices. For several years, I taught about two of the practices at least monthly, and we regularly reflected about them in staff meetings, staff retreats, and just day-to-day conversations. As a well-seasoned staffer and a teacher, I felt that I was an expert on them. However, motherhood has brought new insights to them that I will share with you today. So the first is compassionate seeing. So the definition is the ability to see others as human beings like ourselves, with hopes, fears, and aspirations similar to ours, not as problems to be solved or as projects to be completed, but as people to be appreciated without the need to fix them or solve their problems for them. You can see where this is going with parenthood, right? All right, so having a child, so, and by the way, my son is 2 months, not 2 years, so he's a baby. So having a child has made me look at every child and everyone around me with more compassionate eyes. Each of us is someone's child, and we grew up with parents who probably did the best that they could with what they had. All of us have our own past traumas and past joys. When I look at my son, I wonder what he will take away from his years of growing up with his father and I, and his stepbrothers. I hope he is kind, forgiving, and funny, but I worry that he'll pick up my bad habit of talking to other drivers, or his dad's short temper, or his elder brother's commitment to live solely on chicken nuggets. In the end, though, I don't know what he'll take with him into the world as a child or an adult, and I definitely don't know what coping mechanisms he'll learn, whether it's being stubborn for himself like his eldest brother, or hiding like his younger brother, his next younger brother, martyring himself like I do, or avoiding conflict like his dad. And it makes me wonder what each of us that and every person that I interact with has experienced in their own childhood and adulthoods, and the gifts and the coping mechanisms that we each bring to the world. In working with families who've experienced homelessness, having curiosity about their lives is often the greatest gift that we can give them at times. Do they not clean their apartment because they didn't grow up with an expectation or a skill taught in their homes? Did they not clean because they're going to lose their place, so what's the point? Do they not clean because they don't see themselves as having any value or deserving a nice place? Or do they keep an immaculate place because they were beaten if they didn't? Or do they keep an immaculate place because there's only that's the one thing that they can control in their lives? For each element of our interactions with those that are different than us, it's easy to place our understanding and our lens from our past on their actions. They do or don't do it because they're lazy, or they do or don't do it because they're trying to get a reaction. What if we looked at each person as someone's child, with life experiences that we know nothing about, and look at their reactions with a respectful curiosity? What difference would that make? I want each of you to think about experiences in your life that have shaped you. Perhaps you had a loving grandmother who taught you the importance of empathy and compassion. Perhaps you had an alcoholic parent or were bullied in school. How have these experiences shaped you? And more importantly, how have they shaped you in ways that aren't apparent to others without you giving an explanation or a backstory? How could each of us bring more respectful curiosity to our interactions with those that are different from ourselves, or even those that we interact with all the time? Knowing so much of their story is hidden from us. Heartfelt listening. A willingness to suspend our judgments, our tendency to immediately assign faults or decide who is to blame in a situation, in order to listen with our whole being so that the heart, the emotive core, is engaged and responsive, and we can reflect back to others both what we are feeling and what we sense they might be feeling. As a new mother who breastfeeds, is a stepmom, is a wife, and an unemployed workaholic currently, being truly heard and understood is essential for my well-being, and finding those outlets has not always been easy. Online groups, fellow stepmothers, and a discovery of my own support system has kept me sane as I navigate this new and foreign world of being an unintentional first-time stay-at-home mom. For our families, navigating new and foreign worlds of being inside after a long time outside, or looking for work when they have significant past traumas can be and often is overwhelming. What I've seen make the most difference for them is having at least one person who listens and believes in them, even when they don't agree with their actions. For our families, knowing that someone sees them, hears them, and validates them as a person creates spaces in their lives for new opportunities to arise, like GEDs or thoughtful conversations about money. And now I ask each of you, when have you felt the most heard, and how did you know? Are there certain people in your lives that always make you feel heard or not heard? How often do you truly listen to those around you? And how do you know that they have been heard by you? Intentional welcoming. The discipline of warmly and graciously inviting others into the space of our lives, while also setting appropriate limits by honoring and respecting both our own boundaries and those of others, we create a secure and safe environment in which relationships of trust can grow over time. All right, so boundaries are an ever-changing and complicated thing in our independent Western world. If I had lived in the Ivory Coast, where I was born, It was a warm and communal climate. I would have grown up among a group of women, seeing babies being born, being part of communities, coming around and supporting a new mother, learning about childbirth, breastfeeding, child rearing, and so much more from those women in my life. But I don't live there. I live here, a place where we are polite and we often don't speak about the realities of childbirth. Do we not talk about the realities of childbirth? Let me tell you. All right, motherhood or marriage, because it's not polite or because we fear being judged. So that in many of the roles that I've become in the last few years, I go about alone and confused because I don't have a built-in community around me inviting themselves in. Instead, I've often had to invite others in, which is wonderful in a way because my boundaries are respected. And yet, it takes a different and new vulnerability and courage on my part to really ask for the support that I need, something that is hard, particularly for me as a do-it-yourselfer kind of person. I imagine for our families, communities, and boundaries are also complicated. For many, they share what we might think they should. Sorry, let me try that again. For many, they share more than what we think they should with others because they know that they might not have enough in the future, and this is how they save up in the relationship bank. Help now so that you'll get help later. They don't understand the idea of boundaries and limits in the same way. I should clarify, this is not every person who's experienced homelessness. My stories are related to specific people. They may pay their rent first. They may not understand making sure they can pay their rent first before helping others, or say buying things for their children. And to do so would be a novel concept. At the same time, many families have had to deal with such intrusive help from social services and others that when given the opportunity to not share their whole lives, they choose to hold boundaries that we don't understand because we're only trying to help and we need to know the information to truly help them. So I ask each of you, what experiences have you had that made you hold your boundaries more open or more closed? How much intentionality do you have about your boundaries, or are they more reactive? And there's no wrong answer there. Joyful sharing, a conscious decision about what and how much we want to share that leads to offering our gifts freely and from a place of abundance, while avoiding the resentment that arises when we feel that we have been pressured into giving something more or different than we had intended. My life is lived in 2 to 3 hour cycles, based on what my child, Toby or Tobias or Tobster or Toblerone or whatever else he's been named, you know, currently needs. In those 2 to 3 hours, he'll need to eat, have his diaper changed, spend some time playing, and hopefully spend some time sleeping. For most of the time, I joyfully share myself with him, knowing that these times are fleeting, that we are building our bond, and that my support is essential for his well-being. However, there are times when I am tired or when I really want to get some tasks done as a task-oriented person that I resentfully share. And both of these experiences are okay, but the second one gives me pause, and I wonder, what could I do differently that he could receive joyfully, or he could receive things that are joyfully shared? And that doesn't mean just having me do it then. That's like baby holders. Working with our families and individuals in general, it's easy to resentfully share or even resentfully not share with others. We are frustrated that they ask because we know that they'll just spend the money on something we didn't want them to spend money on, or they may want to chat with us on the bus when we're tired or focused on getting ready for a presentation or for work. And in all of these instances, it makes sense to not share because it would only be sharing resentfully. But there are ways to joyfully share or to accept our boundary that we are needing to hold in a way that doesn't breed resentment. For example, I don't give money because I don't give money. I don't give money because I give food. I don't give money because I set a $20 limit every month of money that I'm willing to share with others, and I've hit that limit this month. And there's no regret, there's no apology. There's nothing, it just is. Or I graciously share what I have because I have more than enough and I just give money when I do. Also okay. What I ask each of you to think about though is in what circumstances do you joyfully share? And are there things that you could and would give up so that you might be more free to share your time and resources with others? Or are there boundaries that you need to accept without guilt or resentment? Look and discover. There may be ways in which you would want to engage. Take on engaging with others differently. Consider taking on that on this week, for just the week. You never know what you might discover and the joy that you might receive from joyfully sharing in a new way or holding boundaries without resentment or guilt. Grateful receiving, Recognizing and honoring the gifts that others have to share, affirming their unique skills and abilities, and allowing them to shine as competent, talented, and self-efficacious human beings who have something valuable to contribute to the greater good of the community. One thing that has surprised me about motherhood is the unexpected gifts that others have given me and that I have gratefully received. My mother-in-law, who I have differing opinions with in other areas of my life, is amazing at simply picking up Toby and changing his diaper. And she also never comes without a baked good. Very essential right now. Friends have set up meal trains or simply invited others to share meals with us in the first few months, something I thought I was never gonna need because I'll make everything from scratch every time. Being laid off has given me precious time to spend with Toby, and having to look for work has given me the opportunity to really consider what I want to do next in life. As a doer, a planner, and a do-it-myself kind of person, these gifts of slowing down, of going with the flow, and of letting others help me, or finding the seeming good in unexpected and hard situations like job loss, could easily have been problematic. But I'm learning to gratefully receive them, because what I gain by letting them in is far better than what I would have received without them around. Our families are expected to be grateful for anything that they receive, and oftentimes they are, but sometimes they aren't. And sometimes, to be honest, they shouldn't be, because they've been given something that they didn't deserve. For example, a car that isn't really roadworthy. I had a very scary story, if you want to hear it later, about a mom and her kids. Anyway. However, I think that the surprise for many of our families has been receiving people's time and belief in them when they worked with our teams from the village. Learning that they can trust again, that they have people in their corner, can be a whole new world for them, and not one they quickly forget. For many of our families, that social and emotional support can be an unknown but important need to be filled alongside the physical necessities. So what are the things in your life that you are quick to gratefully receive? Grandchild cuddles, freshly baked goods in the office, a long coffee date with a friend? And what are the things that you receive that you aren't always so grateful to receive? Constructive feedback from a colleague, a parking ticket when you're only a minute or two over your meter, a change in lifestyle because of bringing your parents to live with you or having a change in your physical health? How can we gratefully receive these things? Maybe it's receiving the things that come along with them, like an amazing home care nurse or precious moments with your parents, or maybe an awareness of time and timeliness that you didn't have before. Consider how you could gratefully receive everything this week. And last, cooperative building, working with others rather than doing it for them, supporting their ability to make positive, healthy choices for themselves instead of making decisions for them, and being open to their desires and ambitions, even though it may be different from our own. Raising a child is a lot of work. Thankfully, most of the time, I have a partner in raising Toby. Unfortunately, this often involves a lot of negotiation and understanding with another. For example, I come into parenting with a view that a two-month-old child cries because they need something, and they don't understand patience, and they aren't being manipulative, and they're not spoiled. So when my son cries, it's a priority to me to try to figure out what isn't working and address it quickly. My husband, on the other hand, perhaps from raising his 10 and 8-year-old sons, often states that crying can't always be addressed, and sometimes you just have to let them cry so that you can eat your dinner or take a shower. I kind of get that sometimes. And so we disagree on crying responsiveness, and we have to navigate the space in between. And we cooperatively build what parenting means for us, which is different from his parenting with his ex or the ways that his parents parented him or mine parented me. And as hard as it is to believe, the adults that each of us interacts with that has experienced homelessness are, in fact, adults. They have lived experiences, opinions, the ability to make decisions, to mess up, to succeed, and so forth. As adults, they do not need others to tell them what to do or to invalidate their choices. What they do need is a community that supports them, both through love and acceptance, as well as through questions, shared experiences, and shared thoughts. Each of us grows through such a community, and I have seen many families gain new life understanding through their time in the village. For example, I think this team was the team that worked with a mom and had a discussion around vaccines with her and whether or not she was going to vaccinate her child. And it was an incredible experience for that mom to go through having people who did not judge her one way or the other on if she was going to vaccinate, even though her mom had a very strong opinion
in a certain way. So it was a new and novel and long-term impacting experience. So for this final reflection, think back to a time when you weren't trusted to lead and live your own life. Perhaps it was by a parent, a friend, or someone from another political party. How did that feel for you? Are these individuals in your life, are there individuals in your life that you don't trust to live their own lives? How can you cooperatively build their lives with them instead of trying to build their lives for them or withdrawing from their lives completely? So in closing, I just want to say, becoming a parent has been quite the new experience, and it has taught me so much and continues to teach me so much about myself and the world around me. I invite each of you to look at your own lives for those moments that have redefined you and the world around you, and consider how you might keep redefining yourself and the world. Engage with those that are different, and perhaps by walking with them as they go through their own transformative experiences, we can create a whole new world that is transformed. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Mm-hmm. And our closing hymn is